Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app. It is 409, 77 degrees on this Friday, March 2nd, 2025. Thank you for joining us for the second hour of the show today on this Friday. You hear ABC News spin those plates on the economy and how things are going and how they can downplay it as much as they want. But things are good, but, you know, there's a lot of speculation that, the tariffs are going to cause heartache for people, and we can't have the heartache, so we must change the perspective from the current positive jobs report to negative, because we say so. That's pretty much what they say to do. A couple of things here. Remember the mainstream media touting that because of Trump, Canada elected a liberal leader? Yeah, that was the thing. It was because of Trump. Because of Trump's hard line, Canada pushed back and hired a liberal leader for their country. Well, congratulations. And this is coming from Canadian, the Toronto Sun in Canada, from their newspaper. So congratulations. Prime Minister Mark Carney is betting Canada can spend themselves rich. Yep, they're going to spend themselves rich. His prospective annual deficit for the next 4 years range from 48% to 93% higher than those predicted by the previous Justin Trudeau government. So it's interesting how you'll have the same people here say, well, Trump can't spend his way out of this by getting tax cuts and spending all this money and raising the deficit to stem American manufacturing. But the same thing they're doing in Canada. And it's interesting that the mainstream media wanted to tout that it was because of Trump they elected themselves a liberal leader, and that's a good thing. They're going to take Canada in the right direction. Well, they're planning 48 to 93% deficits over the next 4 years under this new government's leader. One of the other things that I pulled out today, and again, because I tell you often, I look at things from all angles. I get all perspectives on stories I'm talking to. Yes, I'm going to give it to you from my point of view, but I also get the perspective from other people. And I encourage you to do the same. This is a starting point. The conversation you have for me. Listen, I talk about topics from what? Anywhere from 4 to 12 minutes. There's only so much you can grasp. There's only so much that's going to soak in during that time. So it's a starting point. It's a spark for you to look into these stories yourselves. But this was a real good one today about today's reports that came out, the economic, where we stand. The jobs report confirms the real reading of the GDP report, that the economy is generally good, in good shape, driven by technology and innovation along with good consumer economy. The press has been spinning down the economy with anecdote-based articles predicting all sorts of calamities. Day after day, find one person somewhere who is down on the economy and print it. The facts are that the GDP reduction was artificial since imports are subtracted from the GDP, and once you correct that from the numbers, we're solid, and so was 177,000 jobs. Yes, tariffs offer some uncertainty, but the math is the math. Only 11% of our economy is imported. The 20% inflation experienced under Biden and the trillions wasted in the Inflation Reduction Act dwarf the potential tariff effect, yet the press saw no harm there. And the tariff plans are being modified and targeted. Net, net, it remains a healthy economy that would best be helped by reining in government spending, tax measures that stimulate business investment, less regulation, lower interest rates, and lower energy costs. You know who said that? Mark Penn. Mark Penn is the CEO of Stagewell Incorporated, past EVP strategy of Microsoft, past CEO of B&M, And he's a past advisor to President Bill and Hillary Clinton on their economic trends, also the author of Microtrends. So both President Clinton's economic advisor and an advisor to Hillary Clinton during the campaign just stated that our economy is in a real good place. And it's the media that's playing the naysayer here, and we should just continue the course. I printed that on my social media, so you could take a look at it there. Mark Penn also posted exactly that, which is exactly why I gave him the credit for it, on his social media on X. So when you look at things through a clear lens, not a prism, not through anything else, and say it for what it is, which this today's mainstream media will never do. And at least we know that. And we kind of put that right out there out front. But there's some of the stories from earlier this week about the tariffs, the scare tactics and everything, but the economy. Just listen to ABC Newsbreak when they talk about the numbers that came out today. They talk about positive numbers, but then they say, well, with the tariffs, you know, we can't really say that things are positive because they're going to be negative. We assume because some economists say they're going to be negative. So we're not going to paint things in a positive light now, even though they may or may not happen. That's what's happening. So we'll see. The Army is planning on sweeping transformation that will merge or close headquarters, dump outdated vehicles and aircraft, and slash as many as 1,000 headquarter staff positions at the Pentagon and shift personnel units into the field, according to a new memo and U.S. familiar with the changes. The memo released yesterday from Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth ordered the transformation to build a leaner, more lethal force. Colonel Dave Butler, an Army spokesperson, said the potential savings over 5 years would be nearly $40 billion. The U.S. official said as many as 40 general officer slots could be cut as a result of restructuring. They spoke on the personnel issues. The changes come as the Pentagon, under the pressure to slash spending on personnel as part of a broader federal government cut pushed by the Trump administration. In his memo, Hegseth said Army must eliminate wasteful spending and prioritize improvements to air and missile defense, long-range firing, cyber, electronic warfare, and counter-space capabilities. Specifically, he said the Army must merge Army Futures Command and Training and Doctrine Command into one entity and merge Forces Command, North Army, and Army South into a single headquarters. Focus on homeland defense and partnership with our Western Hemisphere allies. As of right now, the Army, and this is just starting with the Army, this is going to go from service to service. Right now, our homeland defense is based on Army North and Army South. So we are still split, as far as our Army goes, into the North and South, as far as defenses, as far as deployments, as far as anything like that. So what he's saying is, listen, America's America. There should be no North or South. This is going to be one command, which means we only need one set of commanders. So half of them are either going to be retired, forced out, or if you're under a flag officer rank, which would be a colonel and below, you're headed out to the field, somewhere else where we need you to be a warfighter. And I applaud this. In addition, he called for the Army to consolidate units, including Joint Munitions Command and Sustainment Command, kind of do the same thing. And we know how this goes. The military's no different. We know how this goes in any place. Listen, have we seen school districts make supervisory positions for someone? Make an administrative position for someone? Yeah, well, the military does the same thing. And once you have that position, well, you have to justify its existence. So you have staffs and you have to come up with things that you do and make yourselves important and say, well, we're the only ones who could do this. And that's what they've done. This is why you have more admirals in the United States Navy than we have ships right now. And we've discussed that on this show many times. We have 6 times the amount of admirals now than we did at World War II, when our Navy was at its largest. On the chopping block would be legacy weapons and equipment programs such as Humvees and some helicopter formations, along with a number of armored and aviation units across active duty forces, National Guard, and Reserve. But the units were not identified. But here's the key issue, and it's highlighted in this article. The key issues is Congress. For years, lawmakers have rejected Army and Pentagon efforts to kill a wide range of programs, often because they are located in the members' home districts. Defense Department and service leaders learned long ago to spread headquarters, depot, troops, and installations across the country to maximize congressional support. But those efforts have also stymied later moves to CHOP programs. So our military, here at home anyway, has been based on making members of Congress happy by putting weapons development, manufacturing, bases, storage facilities in certain locations so those members of Congress will support it. Hey, if we're going to give you 800 new jobs to your district, oh, hell yeah, I'm going to support it. If we're going to build, 20,000 Humvees in your, oh, yep, we're all for it. Does that give us the best bang for our buck? Should our military be appeasing members of Congress by putting jobs, by putting resources in their districts, rather than doing it at the best rate for the taxpayer, the most economical, the best trained, the best place to build it? It gets so as far as we've gone to less capable shipyards to build our submarines, one of our first lines of defense, our submarines. We've gone to less capable builders because they were in certain areas of the country with certain senators or certain congressmen. And if you think that it stops there, it absolutely does not. It absolutely does not. So it's interesting that you'll have members of Congress say, oh, the military is trying to increase their budget by $1 billion, but you go to touch the places in their district, watch how fast they're in an uproar. Those very same people, like, we need to cut the military. We gotta stop focusing on our military spending and focus on our social service spending. All right, we're going to close the Humvee plant in your backyard. Oh, well, I didn't mean cut there. I mean, we should cut shipbuilding that's in somebody else's yard. So, yeah, from the start, I said we need to cut all these programs. We need to downsize. We need to streamline. We need to get rid of fraud, waste, and mismanagement. And that includes the military. But be careful what you wish for, especially when the problem is a lot of these places are where they are because of our elected officials. And that's not how our military should operate. Our military should operate to be the most lethal, feared force in the world. At the best cost for our taxpayers, you and I. Plain and simple. Nothing more. It's 4:22 here at WILK. Time for 2020 traffic and weather together. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. 4:27, 75 degrees. It looks like the angry traffic got some attention from the texters out there. Said, can we have guest traffic reporters, guest speakers? Because why do people have to merge onto 81 at 25 miles per hour? All I could say about that is I heard we talked about yesterday, the Air Force is mothballing the A-10 Warthogs. And if they're not going to do anything with those Gatling guns in the front, we could use a couple in our cars and take out those merging at 25 mile per hour onto the highway, suckers out. No. But please, if you are merging onto the highway, make sure you have a clear entrance. And if you are on the right lane, maybe move over to the left lane and give those people merging on a little space. We could do it all. We can get along, right? Sure we can. So this story has been going on. The death, now we know, is a volunteer firefighter. This body that was set on fire came in as a mannequin, set on fire. And it turned out when they got there to realize that it was a person. But through identification and the investigation so far, they have found out who this individual is. They also, through the medical examiner, found out that they were shot and blunt trauma to the head prior to being set on fire. Now, there's a lot of things here, a lot of things that jump out at me based on my former background. This person, she is a volunteer firefighter. Jessa Lockwood, 39, a volunteer firefighter, ambulance technician, and mother of two, was the woman whose burning body was found Sunday morning along Club 40 Road in Hazleton, Luzerne County. Again, through the medical examiner, it appears that they were shot and had blunt trauma to the head prior to being set on fire. The fact that she is a volunteer firefighter and works in the fire service as an ambulance, as an EMT technician, ambulance technician, and a firefighter, it has to be a priority that one would look at that the body was set on fire. Does this lead to motive?
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses.
It is not hard to destroy a college.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Does this lead to possible suspects? It would put a lot of that on the top of the list as far as I would be concerned. I'm sure the district attorney there, and I know the law enforcement there, is extremely capable, and they're on top of this. And investigations take time. Investigations like this specifically take time. You lock people into statements. You canvass the area. You look for further evidence. You go deeper into forensic evidence. But the mere fact that that this person is was in the fire services, and not only were they shot and blunt trauma force to the head, which, you know, are common methods of homicide. But the fact that the body was set on fire after the fact on a road at, I think this took place at like 7 in the morning when they found when they got the report of the 911 call of a burning mannequin. So it's not like you were hiding the body. You weren't discarding it somewhere where you were hoping it wouldn't be found. You put it on a road where people lived. Someone saw the fire, thought it was a mannequin and called 911. So you have to look at the motive probably wasn't to discard the body or destroy the body. And anyone in a fire service would have to know that setting the body on fire, yes, would destroy evidence, would make it more difficult, but it really does not do much as far as hindering an investigation. It may take things a little longer, but it's not going to hinder or stop the investigation. Like you could tell, even though the body was burned and set on fire, medical examiner through an autopsy is easily able to determine, obviously, a gunshot wound and blunt force to the trauma to the head. You know, I've sat through, more than dozens, between 60 and 70 autopsies of bodies for homicides that I've investigated. It's amazing what could be seen, and I don't want to give a lot of that out to the general public because knowledge of that could be used to help, you know, prevent evidence from being there. And if criminals were smart, then law enforcement would be in a lot more trouble. And some criminals are pretty intuitive of what they do. But there's a lot to unpack here. There's a lot to look at. And again, one of the things that jump out at me as a former homicide detective is the fact that this body was, in fact, set on fire. And this person was in the fire service. Now, it may not be connected, but it's something that would jump at the top of my list that I want to check out if I was looking into that. So tragedy here from reports. You know, she was devoted much of her time to caring for the elderly. Her heart was her vast ambitions. She found fulfillment in small acts of kindness that made a significant impact on others' lives and set her obituary, which was posted by the Harriman Funeral Home. So a lot to unpack here, but no doubt that the district attorney and the local authorities, the investigators that are looking into this, should have some good leads and some good information in not too distant future, I would imagine. It's 4:32 here at WILK. Time for the news with Paul Michaels.
Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's the point of the show where we honor our heroes here at home who made the ultimate sacrifice in law enforcement. We're going to start with Corporal Robert Lee Walker, Chester City Police Department in 2017. He died as a result of health complications due to his assignment at the Wade Dump Fire. Patrolman William Jerome Jerry McCarthy IV, Shenango Township Police Department in Pennsylvania, was struck and killed while responding to the area of pursuit in Newcastle. Subject Beale ran a stop sign at the intersection of Warren Avenue and Cascade Street and crashed into the passenger side of the cruiser, where Officer McCarthy was seated. Captain Edward A. O'Donnell, no relation, West Homestead Borough Police Department of Pennsylvania, 1938, succumbed to injuries sustained the previous day on a motorcycle accident while attempting to catch a vehicle that had run a red light. Wagon man William J. Johnson, Pittsburgh Bureau Police in 1921. He was killed when the patrol wagon he was driving was struck by a streetcar at the intersection of Alexander Street and South Main Street. And we have patrol officer James Cusia, Newcastle Borough Police Department in 1918, was shot and killed while he was attempting to arrest four suspects who were posing as federal agents selling Liberty Bonds. The suspects were also in the process of robbing a local rooming house when the shooting took place. He was able to return fire, killing one of the suspects. And those are our five here. I also want to recognize, before we go to the break, let me get it up so I get it correctly. I was going to save this for today in history, but I'm going to do it now. Today, on the 120th anniversary of the Pennsylvania State Police, we stop to honor 104 troopers who made the ultimate sacrifice to our Commonwealth. They're heroes who will never be forgotten. And that was put out by the Pennsylvania State Police Troopers Association. But today is the 120th anniversary of the Pennsylvania State Police. So if you see a trooper out there, if you are a trooper, if you're married to a trooper, have ever been a trooper, thank you. Thank you. Thank you indeed. It's 4:40 here at WILK. Time for our regular traffic and weather. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's time for Today in History, because how do we know where we're going unless we remember where we've been? And here's an overview of some of those significant events in U.S. history. We talked about this yesterday, 2011. Now, Osama bin Laden was killed on May 1st at 11:30 at night Eastern Standard Time here in the United States. But it was May 2nd in Abbottabad, Pakistan. It's about U.S. Navy SEALs conduct a raid in Abbottabad, Pakistan, resulting in the death of al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden nearly a decade after September 11th attacks. 1970, Kent State unrest begins. Amid escalating Vietnam War protests, an ROTC building at Kent State University was set on fire. This event led to the deployment of the Ohio National Guard and set the stage for the tragic shooting on May 4th. 1927, Buck versus Bell decision. The United States Supreme Court upheld the Virginia law permitting the forced sterilization of individuals deemed unfit, a conversational decision that has been widely condemned. Again, that was 1927. 1918, GM acquires Chevrolet. General Motors purchased the Chevrolet Motor Company, making a significant consolidation in the American automotive industries. 1885, Good Housekeeping debuts. The first issue of Good Housekeeping magazine was published in Massachusetts, aiming to promote household excellence. A little Civil War milestone, 1863, Stonewall Jackson was wounded. Confederate General Thomas Stonewall Jackson was accidentally shot by his own troops during the Battle of Chancellorsville. He succumbed to the injuries 8 days later. 1946, Big Alcatraz escape. An attempted escape of six inmates from Alcatraz Federal Penitentiary led to a violent two-day standoff resulting in multiple deaths and injuries. In 1975, the birth of the F-18 Hornet. Still in use today, the United States Navy selected Northrop's YF-17 design, leading to the development of the F-18 Hornet, which then turned into the F-18 ENF Super Hornet, a versatile multi-role combat aircraft, where today it turns 50, and it's still in use. It's still our primary fighter attack aircraft. We have 1964, first major Vietnam War student protest. Approximately 1,000 students marched in New York City as part of the May 2nd movement, marking one of the earliest large-scale student demonstrations against the Vietnam War. 1964, KKK murders in Mississippi. Henry D. and Charles Moore, two African-American teenagers, were kidnapped and murdered by the Ku Klux Klan members in Mississippi. Their bodies were discovered 2 months later during a search for other missing civil rights workers. Some notable birthdays today. Dwayne The Rock Johnson, 1972. Actor, former professional wrestler, known for his roles in action films and wrestling career. David Beckham, 1975, renowned English soccer player, celebrated for his time with the Manchester United and LA Galaxy. And Engelbert Humperdinck, 1936. British pop singer, famous for hits like Release Me. And that's pretty much today in history. Let me see what we have here. Some text message coming in. You can call or text at 570-883-0098. All the stuff about positive economic news, I noticed no mention of the single most important economic indicator, egg prices. It's funny how that happened. You listen, Democrats switched from egg prices to MS-13 gang members. And the new audio of his common law wife, I guess, it's technically not his wife. From everything I gather, she has different names, but they do have children. They did live together, so they are at least a common law wife. There's audio now of her giving an interview, an earlier interview about the abuse that he caused her, the bruising, the punches, the slaps, the pulling her hair, throwing her to the ground, holding her against her will. This is in her own words. And USA Today put the audio out there. USA Today ran with it. They've received the audio from a prior interview from an earlier PFA. And she said that she wanted to get a PFA even earlier when she originally called police. But his family, this MS-13 gang member, domestic abuser's family, convinced her not to, saying, you know, he was having problems and you have kids together and it's a bad thing for everybody. So she backed off. And then she said he was beating her one day and she opened the door and saw a neighbor and called for help. And he yanked her by the hair and threw her to the ground and punched her in the face. She said during the interview that she has pictures of her bruising from being punched, smacked, and hit. It's just not getting good. And it's interesting how they now morph to, it's not about him. It's not about that he's obviously not a good person. He's obviously, it's not about him, the individual. It's about the lack of due process. But again, when you go to it, he did receive due process. He received due process on two separate occasions. And the only restriction was you could not send him to El Salvador. And the reason for that restriction no longer exists, so it wasn't valid. And he was sent to El Salvador, his home country. But it's interesting how their narrative now changes in regards to it. You know, now they're so interested about due process. What about due process? What about the legislative process where the Biden administration changed the definition for an asylum seeker? And Tom Holman did a great job at the White House the other day explaining that why were they releasing these individuals into the country and redefining asylum, giving them court cases anywhere from 5 to 7 to 8 years in advance. Well, A, they hope that there's another administration by then, and that'll be that. But if they're put in an ICE detention facility, within 32 days, by law, they have to have a hearing. An asylum hearing. Within 32 days, if they're in an ICE facility, they have to receive an asylum hearing. And he goes, and 98% of them don't qualify for asylum, and they're sent back. That's why the Biden administration did not want to put them in ICE facilities, did not want to hold them. So they redefined what asylum was to expand the pool of people they could release into the United States, millions. And purposely unsecured a border. But now it's all about due process. They did everything in their power to circumvent the process under the Biden administration, to ignore precedent by redefining asylum. The only advice I could give now is I hope that our legislators who are out of session right now are preparing the laws to codify, to make law, the executive orders that have been signed. Because if not, as we change presidents every couple of years, so will the processes that are followed. And as we've seen in just 4 years under the Biden administration, the invasion that we've put up with. It's 4:53 here at WILK. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. 4:56, 74 degrees on this Friday, May 2nd. Also got some good news. I just saw the Navy Times just posted that the USS Truman, one of our two aircraft carriers that are in the Middle East, in the Red Sea right now, will be returning home next week. It's going to take a lot of time to be back, but it's headed in the right direction. So that's some good news coming from Navy Times that the USS Harry S. Truman and its battle group will be coming home. They've been out there for 9 months now. So that's some good news coming from that area with everything that's been going on there. So through an executive order late yesterday, Donald Trump has terminated NPR and PBS's federal funding with a sweeping executive order. And there's a lot. I mean, these organizations, NPR and PBS, even our local affiliates are already putting out to demand you contact your member of Congress that this funding should be restored and such like that. Listen, NPR only receives, and this was even through the ABC Newsbreak, NPR only receives 10% funding from the federal government. PBS, 30%. Well, it doesn't seem like it would be too hard to make up that funding elsewhere, would it? And listen, I do not think that the American taxpayer should be funding NPR or PBS. It's come a long way since, you know, we were younger and it had a different purpose. I mean, how much did they make for selling Sesame Street? Go ask. You got to ask yourself, which is basically a private. I think HBO owns it now, Sesame Street. And listen, they do a lot of good. They write good articles, but, you know, it shouldn't be paid for by the taxpayer. And if you look at a lot of the stories, the way they lean, they've obviously been biased in their reporting. So sooner or later, that's going to catch up with you. And it looks like it did. You know, I'm sure you'll have judges somewhere in the United States, as we've seen, insert themselves to try and try to breach themselves into the executive branch and let that end up where it's made. So, but it looks like NPR and PBS, and I'm sure, like I said, there'll be court battles over this. They're already threatening to sue over the funding. But it looks like the writing's on the wall. And again, if NPR only receives 10% funding from the federal government and PBS only receives 30%, well, look for alternate funding sources. I mean, they do play commercials. They do everything that a regular news station does. And there is a need for them. They are good at what they do in a lot of things, you know, especially some of their nature documentaries and such like that. But even local reporting, you know, I read a story today from WVIA, pretty in-depth. And there's been a couple. I think that's the second one this week I read. So there's not make them go away. Just I don't think the taxpayer, you or I, should be burdened with supporting it.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator and my friend Craig Thomas.
Follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.